Hey, Wonderfuls. Welcome to this Angela Kinsey re-release. We realized that we didn't think we had re-released Angela's episode, which happened many, many years ago and is one of my favorites. So we wanted to take this opportunity to throw it into the feed so that you can enjoy it. Of course, she has a marvelous podcast called Office Ladies with Jenna, her co-star in The Office, and is just an all-around delightful human being. So giving her some love, giving her a shout out, and I hope everyone has a happy Halloween. Hey, this is the JV Club. I'm Janet Varney. I am here with the wonderful Angela Kinsey.
Thank you.
And she is Angela on The Office.
I am.
And we have known each other kind of in the comedy community for here in Los Angeles since pretty much since I got down here. You're one of the people, you may not remember this, but you're one of the people that I met pretty fast because I was sort of popping around the IO West, mm-hmm. which is short for Improv Olympic, which is a great improv school and theater in LA. And that's sort of the world that you came out
of. I was performing there. I pretty much was like, I would do any show.
Yeah.
just get me on stage.
Yeah.
Not a huge audience Sunday night at 11, FYI.
Yeah.
Maybe that's changed.
Yeah. I don't know that it has. I've done a few shows there, and I feel like sometimes, but you know what? Weirdly, sometimes the best shows I've done have been like the audience of two people who are just going to be on board for whatever you do because they are there to support.
So excited.
Gosh darn it. Dag nabbit. But now, that's where the similarities kind of end in terms of when we go backwards towards being a kid and being a teenager and talking about our crazy, dorky teenage experiences. You were born, I think you were born in the South.
Yes, I was born in Louisiana, in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Lafayette, Louisiana.
And then right around my second birthday, we moved to Jakarta, Indonesia.
See, now that's when things get weird. I can't relate to that at all, but I'm fascinated by it. And I would love to hear how and why.
My dad's a drilling engineer. And there was an oil company that he was recruited by, and we went there. And my mom thought he was crazy. It was like, you know, in the 70s, and my mom was from a small town in Texas, like living in the South. And she's like, we're going where? Why? Are you serious?
I'm sure.
And then I had three older sisters, and, you know, she loaded up her girls.
How old were the other girls?
Well, here's the thing. I was kind of a surprise baby.
Okay.
I say surprise. My mom says a miracle.
There you go.
God's miracle. Because that's what moms do. They put that great spin on things.
Well, they wouldn't love you otherwise.
I know.
They wouldn't love you at all.
I thought I was an accident. No, you were not.
Oh,
God's miracle.
Bless.
So, but my sisters are much older than me. So I had I had one in college and two in high school, and then me at 2 years old when we moved to Indonesia.
And so the one in college did not go, but the two in high school did.
She came for the summer, and she was like, "This is where you guys live. This is crazy."
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
What was it like? What was the area that you were living in like? Was it really rural? Was it really metropolitan?
No, it's a huge city. Mm-hmm. Just think of like moving to Los Angeles, but the difference between incomes was so vast. So you would be at a red light, and there would be a Mercedes next to you, and then a guy driving a Bayczok. And the Bayczok you've probably seen it in movies and stuff, but it's like someone who sits behind a little seat and they pedal you around town.
Yeah.
So there'd be a Bayczok driver, and then there would be homeless people begging for money, all at one intersection, you know?
Yeah.
So it was always like, I was very aware at a young age that there were a lot of people who had nothing.
Yeah.
Because I saw it all the time.
Yeah.
Which I try to tell my 3-year-old daughter. In L.A.,
it's hard to more isolating in Los Angeles. It's really you would literally have to take her and drive her downtown and drive her around.
I've become a cliche to her. Like if she I try to get her to eat a vegetable and she like flicks it on the ground, I'm like, do you know there are little kids who have no food in the world?
I have witnessed it firsthand. Mm-hmm. I'm not just that mom who's saying it vaguely.
And then my friend's like, Ange, you're kind of going dark with her kind of early. I'm like, no, that's the real world.
No, you're not. I have tremendous respect for you having had that experience and it having left that kind of an imprint on you. And I would never, I don't think anybody would question that you're a better, more spiritually rich person. And so you grew up living there. Obviously, it's incredibly different from living here.
Yes.
What was it like for you living there, maybe a little taste of your childhood there, and then when you found out when you were 14 that you guys were moving back to the States, what was that like?
I did not want to move back to the U.S. The only world I knew...
Did you remember? You didn't remember it at all, really?
No, we would come home in the summers.
You would? Okay.
We would come home when I got older. When I was younger, we stayed there pretty much straight for a few years. But then we would come back and we would go to Louisiana and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, kind of oddly enough, we'd go to Singapore and Hong Kong and sometimes Japan. So I had these very fun summers, but I always had about 4 weeks in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Two in Texas, two in Louisiana. I'd go to a family reunion. I'd make a mud pie. You know, I'd like have a sparkler on 4th of July, homemade popsicle. It was great. Great place to visit.
Yeah.
Did not want to move here.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I didn't want to move here is I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what it would be like to live here. And all my friends, you know, that's the hardest thing about moving when you're a kid is that your social world, your friends is so important to you.
Yeah.
And so I really cried. I didn't want to go back. I begged my mom and dad if I could stay in Indonesia and live with a family friend and finish out high school. My mom was like, absolutely not. I'm not leaving you in Indonesia for, you know, 4 years.
Yeah.
And so we moved to the U.S. And then my school in Indonesia, I was ahead in a few subjects. That's the other thing in America. We are really forgetting our public school system.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
So I come back to the U.S. and we moved to Dallas. And the first part of the day at my school, I was at a middle school, which was 7th, 8th, and 9th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom came and picked me up. So that made me a huge dork already. My mom picked me up at lunch. I didn't get to eat lunch in the cafeteria and meet people.
Oh, she
picked
you up
at lunch with my mom.
Wow.
As she drove me to the high school, which was just 10th, 11th, and 12th graders.
Yeah.
And then I finished the day at the high school.
Oh, that's so confusing.
So horrible.
When you're trying to acclimate anyway.
I'm new to the U.S. My first year, I'm new to two schools.
No.
And at both schools, I'm a freak. What's up? This is why I'm in comedy.
Oh, bless
your
heart.
Do you do? You either turn like dark and scary.
Yeah.
Or you just make fun of it all.
You got to protect yourself somehow.
Yeah. So then I'm at 10th and 11th and 12th grade, huge school in Dallas, 5A. That's as big as they get. It's like a community college.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, the people that were the nicest to me at the high school were the burners.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
The people sitting outside having a smoke.
Yeah.
They were just like, what is your deal, man? You want to hang out? I was like, sure. And I was really like straight-laced. And
you were?
Oh, yeah. I didn't get into a lot of mischief because my sister Tina got into a lot of mischief. And I think if you have an older sibling that kind of gets in a lot of trouble,
that
you just don't have any interest. It's like, oh, I just don't feel like having mom and dad yell at me because I snuck out, whatever.
Yeah.
And
you're watching the experience of the bad stuff and you're not experiencing personally the quote unquote fun stuff that might make it worth it or whatever.
Totally. I just saw like the arguments and the fighting.
Yeah.
And
getting
grounded all the time. And so I became incredibly honest with my parents. I was like, hey, so I think I'm going to go hang out with these guys and gals tonight at a party. They're older than me and they might be drinking and doing stuff, but I don't really want to do any of it.
Yeah.
And my mom would be like, what? Instead of my sister.
Should I go with you?
Yeah. So, and then I would like call my mom from there, like, hey, mom,
this is pretty lame.
Yeah.
I'm not into it.
Not into it. Come get me.
But you were but you did become friends with like when you settled in a little bit more. God, I'm just having trouble imagining a whole, period of time that you were, how long did you say
I did
you were
that
doing?
For a year.
Going to two different schools.
Well, we moved in December, so I guess it was the latter end of 9th grade and then 10th grade, I was at the big high school.
Uh-huh.
But it was hard being at the big high school being in 9th grade because there was no one my age.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I missed all the pep rallies and after school stuff with kids my age at the middle school because they happen after school and I'd be at the high school. So then we did that. And then my dad decided, because he'd been transferred by this big company, my dad decided to go into business for himself and move us to, guess where my grandparents live, the town of 1,800 people called Archer City. And they have a farm there. Listen, I had only ever lived in a huge city my whole life. Yeah. Jakarta, huge city. Dallas, big city. So I'd been to my grandparents' farm, you know, to visit.
Right.
So my dad sat us down and was like, I'm not happy in Dallas. I'm not happy. You know, I wasn't really happy with this big move that we did. The company is different here. I want to go into business for myself and be a drilling consultant. I can live anywhere, and where I want to live is on the land that we own in North Texas.
Mm.
And I was like, so wait, you want us to move again? And he was like, yes, to Archer City. And at this point, I just went, fine. I was like, seriously, Dad, I can live in Timbuktu and I'll find my way now, because I just went through this hell year.
Yeah.
My mom said that she would drive me that first year where I was going to two schools. She would drive me to school and I'd cry on my way to school. Oh my and then gosh. She would let me out and she said she'd cry on the drive back to our house.
No.
It was a tough year.
Yeah. Well, really did you feel like, I mean, you talked about the people who were nice to you and the burners that were smoking and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you make, I mean, if you were willing to just go and move onto the farmland, it sounds like maybe you didn't even, did you manage to make any close girlfriends?
I actually, in Dallas that whole year, I was just like this weird satellite outside of the mm-hmm, community mm-hmm. of school, because I was not really at either school. So I didn't form any huge bonds with anyone there.
Did you take any classes that you were excited about, like theater or?
No.
Didn't even get in. You just kind of got through.
Yeah, I just got through. Mm. I just was like putting one foot in front of the other, and I kind of checked out and was like a little numb there.
Yeah.
And it was hard to make friends because I was never at either school during like very social times.
Yeah.
And so I just hoped that once that year was over and I was at one school, things would change.
Yeah.
And then we moved.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is I moved to the U.S. and I just wanted everyone to like me. And at my school in Indonesia, I was just myself, mm-hmm. you know, and I had this straight, stringy hair. I was kind of like a beach girl. We didn't, like in Indonesia, like it was kind of that beach vibe. Like you didn't curl your hair and wear a lot of makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the U.S. and in Dallas, everyone had big hair and lots of makeup. I know. So I went crazy with big hair and makeup.
This will make them like me.
I'll fit in now. And then when we moved to Archer City for my junior year, I went back to not caring. Because I was like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
That last year sucked and I cared way too much and I'm just going to be me again. So like I actually ended up just having a great time in this small town. I think because I just wrote it off and thought, I'm just going to be me. Nothing can be as bad as last year.
Nothing can be as bad, exactly.
And then I went there and I made great friends that are still friends of mine to this day. And I was 100% fish out of water.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a rodeo was. I did not have a driver's license because in Indonesia we couldn't drive.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. You know, you move to the U.S. and everyone knows how to drive. Like kids learn how to drive so young here.
Yeah.
Especially in farm country, because they will drive a tractor or a pickup truck on the farm and there's nothing they can hurt or run into.
Right.
So all those people knew how to drive and they just took me in and just like I was different and they loved it because they were so tired of everything being mm-hmm. the same in this small town.
Nice.
So yeah.
Is that when you kind of got into, when did you get into performing, I guess is my question.
Well, I did that all along.
You did.
When I was 4 years old, my mom asked me what I wanted to be. She'd asked my sister. My sister said a dump truck driver.
Nice.
Yeah, I know.
My
uncle at the time was driving dump trucks and she thought that was rad. She saw one while we were home for the summer. She just thought it was really cool. So I said at four, I said Carol Burnett. Like I just knew.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
And I think that's like one of the coolest gifts that I've ever been given. You know, whether you believe in God or not, but it's to me to know very early on what I wanted.
Yeah.
Because I saw one of my sisters sort of keep changing her mind as life has gone on, even now into adulthood.
Yeah.
And starting over is hard. And every time you do, you're just sort of searching for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think when you know so early on, the things around you can change and the people can change, but you still know yourself and your core and what you want. Yeah. And that's what I wanted. I wanted family and I wanted to perform.
That's awesome.
So I was the kid in the neighborhood in Indonesia. Like, I would write little plays or skits, and I would make my friends or my dad or mom be different parts. And then when we got to the U.S., to Dallas that year, that was so, like, crappy. Even though I was at two schools, I did Grease at the middle school, and I did like a talent show at the high school, which was horrifying. I did like a monologue from like a serious play. Like, I'm already an outsider.
That's what teenage kids want to hear. Totally. Is a serious monologue.
Yeah,
at
I did
a talent
some monologue.
Show. While everyone
horrible.
Else is probably like busting
wacky.
Like,
I also had the body of like a 2x4 plank of wood. You know what I mean? Like, I was just a stick.
Yeah.
No curves. I mean, if I cut my hair short, I'd look like a boy. Like, I was such a skinny string bean. And so I'm in this talent show and I do like some monologue, and they're girls like dressed like Britney Spears, like singing and dancing. And I'm and now for my monologue.
Oh.
When in disgrace and fortune in eyes. Like some
Did you think about that going in when you made the decision to do it? Did you have the moment of like, I wonder if this is going to fit in with what else everybody else is doing? Or are you just like, this is going to be gold?
No, I was taking like a drama class, and my drama teacher was like, she was in charge of the talent show and she wanted to round it out. And she was like, Angela, that monologue you did in class is so good. You should do it. Ah, silly adult talking me into it because she's trying to make her talent show more diverse. But I actually I remember having this one proud moment because everyone went quiet at the end when I like had this emotional moment. Like, everyone went quiet. And then I got a little bit of slow clap.
But
they still thought I was a freak. It was like, oh, slow clap, freak girl.
Slow clap stayed slow clap. It did not erupt into a standing ovation.
But I got a smattering of applause. But but yeah.
But did you do a good job?
I did.
Screw them.
I did. I knew I did a good job because like this one jock guy who was like picking on everyone and like one of the front rows stopped and he like listened. And then he actually treated me a little differently from then on. Like, just like, you're serious. But I wasn't. I'm like a total comedian.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You didn't want to be typecast.
I didn't want to be
typecast. And from an early age, you knew that you had to show that you had range.
Yes, exactly. But I did
just
know,
in case that footage ever gets out, people will know what you're capable of.
Thank God. I was before the internet and before people filmed stuff.
Right? I think about that too. Oh my gosh. So much stuff I did.
I'm so
glad. I
think about that so many times out in LA. Like, some ridiculous stuff Danielle and I did in sketch shows.
Yeah.
Although I do think there's footage somewhere. Oh,
I'm
scary.
Sure there
scary.
Is. Can we just jump back really quickly? Because if I were listening to this, I would want to know, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Angela, please don't sip that iced tea.
Too late.
All right. I don't know how we're going to bounce back from this.
Where are you going back to?
If I were listening to this, I would have wanted to know a little bit more about the diversity of your school in Indonesia. Because I know that you spoke, obviously, Indonesian in addition to English. Was it an all English speaking school? Where were you learning the language and using it? And where were you using English?
This is a very good question.
Thank you.
So in Indonesia at the time, the government actually had a rule that if you were non-speaking, if you're an expatriate, that you, as a child, you had to take Indonesian starting, I think it was in fourth grade, which I think is awesome. I think we start our language programs way too late. The rest of the world speaks a lot of languages, you know,
absolutely.
Like if you go to Europe or anywhere else.
Yeah.
So at my school, starting in fourth grade, I was taught proper Indonesian. But I had already been living there for a long time. Yeah. And whenever you live in another culture, you just pick up. I knew a lot of the street language, which when I then started taking classes at school, my friends and I that had been there since like we were little, we were fluent, but we drove our teacher crazy because we were fluent in such street slang.
Yeah.
So she was always honest. Like, for example, there's a word that means no, and it's tida. And that's like a proper way to say no, tida. But then street slang is nga. And then super street slang is like nga. Like, you know what I mean? Like nga mau. So like we would say nga and our teacher would be like, ah. Anyway, this is a random Indonesian tangent. But
it's fine. It's fascinating.
But we started language in fourth grade and you had to study it all the way through. And then they started you on other languages in sixth grade. So I was all set to be starting French. I had 3 years of Spanish, and I was supposed to be starting French.
Oh, that's so great.
And so when we came to the U.S.,
oh my gosh.
When we came to the U.S., some of my things didn't transfer. So I took Spanish 4 at the school in Dallas.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Archer City. And this is a very small.
I mean, imagine you. That's so amazing. Imagine you with your languages and your experiences moving to that town.
Crazy, though, because I go to register for class, and I'd never been to a school this small. So the first thing I said was, what's my locker combination? And the woman was like, oh, we don't use any lockers, don't have any locks. We don't have any. I was like, what if someone takes your stuff? But like, you were in school, like,
you know,
I graduated
everyone.
With 34 people.
Yeah.
They just looked at me like, are you crazy? Like, I felt like I'd moved to like some very quaint Norman Rockwell
town. Sure.
Like, and so I was like, okay, I don't need a padlock. Okay. And so then I'm like signing up for classes and I go, I'll take Spanish 4, please. And she looked at me and she goes, our Spanish only goes to Spanish 2. Oh. And I said, oh, okay. Well, then I'll take French 1. And she goes, we don't have French. Oh. And I said, what do you have? Do you have German? She goes, no, we have Spanish 1 and 2.
Oh.
So I had tested out of the Spanish, which was crazy.
Would you like to teach Spanish 3?
I could have. I could have because there was like a coach, a volleyball coach teaching it. And I was like in the library one time where she was, I had like free period and she was like giving a quiz in the library. And I was just like, I know all the answers.
Now, did you have, and what about racial diversity in Indonesia?
Oh,
in the schools?
Nationalities. Yeah. Sorry. I forgot about that part. It was called Jakarta International School. And my best friends were from, you know, Holland and Hungary. And a lot of, had friends from the Philippines, just all over. And a lot of my childhood memories of, you know how you have memories of teasing someone?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't transfer at all. And like when I've been performing at Improv Olympic and like I'll be doing a monologue or some kind that the improvisers then, you know,
sure.
use the material
for. Do a scene off of, yeah.
Like we were talking about like nicknames and stuff, and we had a guy in my school named Ramesh, and he was from Pakistan. And we thought he was incredibly hairy for a young guy. And so we, as kids, teased him. We called him Ramesh Rambutan. And I was like, we got him Ramesh Rambutan.
And there's just silence.
And like blank silence. And I go, because rambutan is a really hairy fruit in Indonesia. And it was like silence.
No translation.
You know, like, I don't know. And I didn't watch television growing up, which is very...
Like, but you knew Carol Burnett.
I knew Carol Burnett because we would come back to the U.S. And it was like...
Oh my gosh.
Just this insane drug.
Cultural overload.
Oh my goodness. I felt like, you know, like in The Fifth Element.
What is this box with pictures?
And then she sits there and like watches TV for hours. That's what I would do. My mom would get so mad at me. She'd be like, you're not playing outside with any of your cousins. We're here to visit them. And I would just be like, but mom, like there's 800 shows on.
Stop being such a hairy fruit, mom.
I know. Stop being a rambutan.
Stop being a rambutan.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
I'm Jesse Thorne. On the next Bullseye, our annual Halloween Spectacular. We'll interview Anna Fabrega from Los Espookies, Monet Exchange from Drag Race, and the great R.L. Stein, creator of Goosebumps.
You know, I don't really get too deep into the real fears. It's a lot safer to do a dummy coming to life.
That's on the next Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Wonderfuls, I have got to tell you about America's number one meal kit, the delightful and delicious HelloFresh. You know, you too can skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking so easy, so fun, and extremely affordable. Here's the thing. HelloFresh works with your ever-changing schedule, which is definitely something I value so much because I travel all the time. So I love the fact that plans are flexible. I can choose my meals for the week and I can always update my preferences. I can change my delivery day, all in the HelloFresh app. This goes for you too. I love that they are now offering vegan recipes on the menu, made without animal products of any kind. If that's what you're into, you can get stuff without dairy, meat, eggs, or honey. You can enjoy meals like sweet chili tofu bowls or spicy coconut curry stir fry. And HelloFresh is 25% cheaper than takeout, and it's still less expensive than grocery shopping, which is so amazing. So you can go ahead and check save money off of that fall to-do list, friends. Now, Brandon and I just made the cauliflower and chicken tikka masala, and I gotta go ahead and say it was heavenly. And And we are both, like, we love tikka masala so much, but it's just not something that we would ever think to make at home. So when I saw the tikka masala show up, I was so excited. I also just love the portion size of all HelloFresh meals, because to be honest with you, I have a tendency to, like, just eat what's on my plate, whether it's too much food or not, and it's always, like, somehow weirdly perfect with HelloFresh. And I gotta tell you, the ingredients are incredibly fresh. So you knew what you were doing when you called yourself HelloFresh, HelloFresh. So Wonderfuls, you too can have HelloFresh in your life every day. You can go to HelloFresh.com/JVClub65 and use code JVClub65 for 65% off plus free shipping. I know, 65% off? What? Is that the best deal I've ever heard? Yes, it is. That's why you gotta go to HelloFresh.com/JVClub65. Remember to use that code JVClub65 for 65% off plus free shipping. That's an insane savings, and I promise you these meals are truly delicious. So make it happen.
Hi, I'm Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have a special announcement. I'm no longer embarrassed by my brother, and me. You know, for years, each new episode of this supposed advice show was a fresh insult. A depraved jumble of erection jokes, ghost humor, and frankly, this is for the best, very little actionable advice. But now, as they enter their twilight years, I'm as surprised as anyone to admit that it's gotten kind of good. Justin, Travis, and Griffin's witticisms are more refined, like a humor column in a fancy magazine. And they hardly ever say bazinga anymore. So, after you've completely finished listening to every single one of all of our other shows, why not join the McElroy Brothers every week for my brother, and me?
So if I were a boy, and living in Archer City, and I met you, I would think that you were the most fascinating creature who's ever walked the earth. So how was that for you? I mean, it doesn't sound like you did too much kind of dating or flirting or maybe your crushes on people when you were in your year in Dallas.
I did nothing in Dallas. I just was like,
you had your head down.
I did. I just, in the beginning, I wanted everyone to like me. And then within a few months, I just wanted no one to notice me because I was so just like, where am I?
When you went home at night, did you keep a journal or anything? Like, did you talk to anyone about what your experiences
were? I did. I've always kept a journal, I have to say.
Until I used to, and I somehow stopped.
I always wrote, like, all through, like, high school, college, I wrote in a journal.
Yeah,
and even into, like, my early time here. I'll tell you when I stopped is when I had a baby. And then I got, like, a baby journal to write down little stories about her.
Yeah.
And I try to send, like, a monthly email to my parents with things she said. So someday I'll print them all out.
Yeah.
But, like, that's really what kicked me in the tush for free time was having a toddler.
Wow. I don't have that excuse. I'm so impressed that you kept journal writing all the way up through having, I mean, until you had her, because that's...
I have them all. I kind of want to burn some of them because, you know,
never. Don't.
You know, one thing you do when you're that young, or not even that young, but when you sort of write your feelings, it's all so sad, sacky. You know,
I know.
Your journals are all like, oh, woe is me.
I love it, though.
It's pretty great. I read from one of my journals that I kept when I interned on Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
Right out of college.
Yeah.
I had.
What a great memoir to be able to have.
He was cracking up and he was like wanting the audience to know, like, this is not a plant. This is her journal. Like, I had, like, I mean, like, tickets.
Wait a minute. Back up.
What?
You kept a journal when you were at Conan and somehow he got his hands on it and trotted it out to the audience?
No. No. He was saying, like, because you always meet with a segment producer before you go on a talk show.
Yeah. So and when you came back to do it.
Yeah. So I said, you know, I still have my journal from when I worked here.
That's awesome.
And I was like, there's some stories I can't share. and they were like, oh, you've got to bring that. You've got to bring
that. Yeah. So you did.
Yeah. And I read like a little excerpt where I was really excited because if you stayed late with the writers, you got free food.
Nice.
Score free food.
Okay. I definitely want to talk about your time, a little bit about your time at Conan. But so let's go back to boys.
Okay, boys in Archer
City.
In high school in Archer City.
So how was that?
Oh, you were still
pretty straight laced.
Very straight laced.
Did you go through, and because of your sister, you never really went through the, like, screw you, mom and dad phase?
I never did.
I think as much probably because of how your parents were older and they had gone through that as much as you seeing your sisters go through that.
Exactly. My parents, when I think you're the baby of the family, like when you're, I was the last of four.
Yeah.
Four girls had worn them out.
A miracle.
Yeah. But my sisters had worn them out and they were older.
Yeah.
And older parents are mellow people.
And
guess
what? So your desire to rebel is also going to be less because you're not going to feel that stringent kind of. Yeah.
But my mom was tough. My dad was a pushover. My mom was tough. And my dad traveled a lot for work, so it was my mom and I alone a lot. So we would bonk heads.
Mm-hmm.
But she had like a lot of rules, like I couldn't have boys in my room with the door shut.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Had to keep the door open.
I feel like that was true for me too.
Now, like that I have a daughter, I'm like, heck yeah, the door is staying open.
Yeah, I know. I know what went on even when the door was open in my life.
Yeah.
So now I would want my kid probably in the living room in front of me.
Totally. Well, I ended up like I tutored like a few like athletes in Archer City.
I love this.
So that was fun. And I think I became like an interesting project for a few people, girls and guys included. Like they wanted to do my hair. They wanted like all these things I didn't know. I just didn't have any of that growing up in Indonesia. So like one of my friends took me, we got my hair permed.
Oh, you got a perm.
And I had crazy wall bangs. And then like one of my guys.
And so wall bangs, for those young listeners who might not know, that's when you're sort of straight up and curled back like a wave almost.
Take your hair backwards and spray it straight up from your forehead and then only curl it in.
Yes, I had
so it. So you look like a claws on your head.
Yeah.
And then you do it out by your ears too.
Oh, that is
so we did
fabulous.
That, and boys, I somehow became all their best friend, and that kind of sucked, because then when you like someone, you're everyone's buddy, you know? So that kind of happened, and then I ended up my senior year dating a guy older than me. He was from my hometown, but he was a junior in college, and then that made all my guy friends in high school mad. They're like, why are you dating him? So much
How
older.
How dare you?
And my dad, when he asked me out, he was a friend of the family. And when he asked me out, my dad said, I said, Dad, and I won't say his name. I was like, but he asked me out and I really want to go. And he was like, well, if he wants to take you out, he has to come over here and talk to me. I was like, oh, Dad, are you serious? That's so lame. And he was like, sorry, he's got to come here and meet with me if he wants to take you out.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my mom, I was like, Mom, can you believe that? So then this guy came over, not even on the night we went out, just like had to come meet the dad.
An interview, a job interview.
Came in the front. And you know that like room by the front door that no one uses? It's it's like a fake living room. I don't even know why you have it.
Uh-huh.
But we had the fake fancy living room
with
no TV in it and like furniture you couldn't do anything. Like couldn't sit
furniture
on.
That crackles when you sit on it because it's from underuse.
Uh-huh. And it's the room my mom put the Christmas tree in. So he came in and dad took him in that room. And we had a door to it, like a hallway door. And my dad shut the hallway door.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I was like, hi. And my dad was like, we'll be with you in a minute. Shut the door. And my mom and I were like trying to eavesdrop. And my mom was like walking to the door, pacing back and forth by it. I don't know what my dad said to this guy. I'll still never know. But the guy, he didn't try a thing. And I only dated him a few months and then I went off to college.
Yeah.
He was like a summer boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know?
The job interview.
I don't know what my dad said. But he was very proper with me.
That's amazing. He was probably scared to death.
Yeah, I have no idea what he said. But I did have like one or two high school boyfriends. But I sort of knew that I wanted to go to college. I knew I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to go to either New York or LA. I knew all of this in high school. And so I didn't take anyone from high school very seriously.
I was going to ask, did you get your heart broken? But it sounds like you were pretty...
I did not get my heart broken until college.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got it decimated.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then I was like super ugly Oprah cry.
So let's get into that then. So you knew that you wanted to go to LA or New York. You went to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you go to school?
Well, I went to college in Texas.
Okay, gotcha.
My mom,
gotcha.
All three of my sisters at one point dropped out of college. And then they went back to school later in life. And so my mom was like, you are not dropping out of college.
I'm going to see this through for you.
Yeah. And so my mom, her stipulation was a private religious university.
Oh, okay.
Because she thought maybe there'd be less partying and less reason to drop out. So I applied to a few colleges like that. And I ended up going to Baylor, which was a Baptist.
Oh, that's right. I did know that. I'm sorry.
And I loved Baylor. I had a great time. And But so I really liked this guy, and we sort of started dating. I had a few college boyfriends, mm-hmm. you know, but just nothing very serious. And then mm-hmm. my junior year, I met a guy and I really liked him, and we started dating. He was older than me. I was a junior, he was a senior. And then he got a job that required him to travel, and he left, and I would go try to visit him. But long distance relationships are so hard. And doesn't matter how old you are. I think there's something to just having to be around each other. Cause what happens is, then when you go see each other, you don't want to bring up anything serious. Mm-hmm.
We have to cherish this time. We can't be real people. We have to be movie people.
We have to be super happy people.
Yeah.
And then sometimes what happens is you don't talk to the person every day. So then you stop sharing your life with them.
Sure. That's huge.
That's the biggest thing. So they don't know about your bad days or your good days. Yeah. And then when you see them, you don't know how to catch it up.
Yeah.
And so I think he kind of had the foresight before I did. And he sort of did that thing though that guys do where they make you break up with him, but they just keep behaving so badly that you have no choice.
Yeah.
But girls were like, well, maybe he's doing that because, or maybe, la, la, la. And then finally you just don't feel valued at all. And then you just break up with them. And then they so quickly are like, oh, well, okay, if you say so.
Right. Right.
You're like, dang it.
Yeah.
You just.
Why don't you fight for me? Why don't you?
But really, it was over for him.
Yeah.
For a while. And I just didn't want to see it. So, that was really hard. And then he came back to college for homecoming, and I didn't see, he was there for the whole weekend. I never saw him. And all that stuff is really hard.
Oh, that feeling too of a long distance relationship. And just even no matter what you're doing when you're in your teens and early 20s, it just seems to me that feeling of, I just feel like I had that feeling in my throat and in my mm-hmm. stomach so much more than I do now. Just the feeling of why hasn't he called, or this really hurts. And I don't know how to tell him that it hurts, because I don't think that's going to solve anything. Telling him that I'm crushed. You don't want to be vulnerable. And then, how do you protect yourself from that? And, do you not communicate it and just hang on, or mm-hmm. do you cheat on him, or all those different.
And then you have two or three girlfriends and they all have a different opinion. Cause my roommate in college was you deserve better. I would totally dump him. And then I had another friend who was no, he's just working really hard, and you just got to give him some space. And then you have all those voices in your head.
I was talking to a girlfriend of mine that I went to college with about this podcast. And she said the first thing that came out of her mouth when I told her I was doing it, she said, I wish I could just time travel myself back with the book, He's Just Not That Into You, and give it to my college self. Cause I really think I would have benefited from it. That's still my friend of mine wrote that. And it's nice to know that it still resonates. Sometimes you need to, exactly what you just said about this guy and the long distance relationship. At what point do you realize, oh, he's just not going to do anything. He's not even going to break up with me.
Yeah. We're not even in the same city.
He can do
very minimal to maintain this relationship.
Yeah.
I used to say this thing all the time. I still say it to myself too, because it's still easy to get your feelings hurt and have friendships that disappoint you and relationships that don't work out. I've learned even later in life.
I wished all that would stop, but that's another reason for the podcast is, guess what? We all still stay teenagers in some way.
Right. Well, we all still struggle with relationships no matter how old you are. I see my mom, my mom has a really, had a very close friend of hers, and they've just sort of drifted apart in their 70s, So it happens. But, I used to just say to myself, people do what they want to do. So if they want to work on it, or if they want to listen to you, or if they want to call you just because, or pick you up at the airport, people do what they want to do at the end of the day. And so it's like, well, then where's their heart? It becomes very clear.
Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah. We try to protect ourselves sometimes by making it super complicated. And,
right.
So you finished at Baylor, and then what took you to New York? I know you wanted to be there, but did you just decide to move after college, or did you get the job, the internship, and that's what moved you out? Or,
well, I am from my hometown is Larry McMurtry, and he's a writer, and he wrote Terms of Endearment, The Last Picture Show.
Didn't James L. Brooks write Terms of Endearment? Did they write it together?
Well, he wrote the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't believe that there are books. I to me, there's only movies.
I think like the most famous one he did is Lonesome Dove.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then
I know him as an author, but for some reason I went straight to show business because I knew that's what you wanted to do.
Right.
So I was like, this movie script that he supposedly wrote, I may have uncovered a big problem here.
Oh no,
no, he wrote the book.
Now I'm like,
copy that.
Now I'm all of a sudden like in my head.
No, I'm
Google
sure you're
it.
Right. I'm sure you're right. I just had Terms of Endearment, the movie, in my head.
Now I need to Google it, honestly, because now I'm not sure. But anyway, he's a very prolific writer.
Lonesome Dove is credit enough.
Yes, Last Picture Show. And then he did the adaptation of Brokeback Mountain for the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he has bought up all of downtown Archer City, all these old little buildings.
Oh, wow.
We have the biggest rare book collection in the
How
Southwest.
How cool is that?
Yeah, so kind of wild. Like, we don't have a hospital. We don't have a real grocery store. We have 6 bookstores.
Wow.
So it's kind of funny because I feel like some of the people in our town, like they love it, but at the same time, they're like, sure, it would be nice to have a hospital.
Just read a book about how to stop your heart from attacking itself.
So my mom's friend is his sister, and she was helping him with the bookstores, and I would hang out there quite a bit with my friend Teresa after school.
Yeah, woo-hoo. You guys were rebels.
I know, rocking it at the bookstore. And Larry would come in town, and I know he doesn't remember this, but it's one of those moments that was pivotal for me. And sometimes people just can really just throw out like a very sort of throwaway comment mm-hmm. that will stick with you. So I'm always kind of aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was applying for internships in LA and New York, and Larry just said to me, he goes, go to New York. He goes, because if you can make it in New York, really, you can make it anywhere. And
he may have stole that copyright.
I think he
from
did.
Someone else.
And he was like, you know, you just should try New York because it's a very vibrant city.
He sure was right, huh? That's the age mm-hmm. to do it.
Yeah. And he said it's a vibrant city and it's full of so much diversity. Mm-hmm. And he said L.A. is kind of a slick city.
Yeah.
And he was like, I just personally, I would go to New York first.
Love
and
it.
And he said, you have all the time to go to L.A. So I did. So I applied for this internship on Conan, and I hear no word. I call every day. I leave this message on this voicemail for the internship program on Conan O'Brien. No word. No word. No word. So then I have nothing but time. I've moved back home with my parents from college. I'm feeling like a loser back in my bedroom from high school.
Right.
And so every day I would call NBC's main line, and I would ask for a different department. So I'd be like, internships, go to the voicemail. Like a PA program voicemail, page program voicemail. So then I called up one day and I said, hi, I was just talking to a woman about an internship on Conan. I got disconnected. And this woman goes, oh, you mean, and I forget the lady's name, but oh, you mean Kathy? I'm like, yes.
Oh,
I was talking to
you
Kathy.
You are good.
And then she was like, well, let me, see, you know, let me put you through. And then I got her assistant, and they were like, she's on the phone. And I said, well, I was disconnected from her. I was talking about an internship. And she goes, okay, who did you say this was? And I was like, it's Angela Kinsey. And so she was like, okay, well, we'll call you back. And I gave my phone number, and then no one called me back. And then so the next day I used the assistant's name. I said, hi, I was talking to Regina, Kathy's
Angela,
assistant.
You're awesome.
I could not live with my parents another second, like right out of college. I was going crazy. So I love my parents, but you know that it is weird going.
No,
home.
You're ready. Yeah. If you've been to college, ready. You yeah. don't, that fe- it does feel like going backwards,
yeah.
I think.
And I had no plan yeah. in Archer City, Texas. I had a plan that involved New York City.
Right.
But I knew my parents sort of would be really hesitant about me moving to New York without a plan. That's my dad. My dad's a big planner.
Yeah.
So I'd have to go and present him this plan because I was going to need some of their help financially, you know? So I had to have a real legitimate hook to
yeah.
get to New York. So then, I called back and I said I was talking to Kathy's assistant, Regina. So they put me through, and Regina was out sick or something. She was out, whatever her name was, she was out that day. So Kathy picked up her own line. She goes, hey, it's Kathy. And I go, hi, Kathy. I was talking to Regina yesterday about an internship on the Conan O'Brien show. And she goes, well, we have one on Conan available, and we have one on for like the Today show for the news. And she was like, did you leave me a message on my voicemail? I said, I did. And she goes, and did you, you know, send me your resume? I said, I did. And she goes, huh? And she goes, and how did you get this number?
Oh.
And I said, well, I got your name because I called every day. And finally, I got your name. And then I just asked to be put through to you. And I lied. And she said, really? And I said, yeah. And she goes, could you come day after tomorrow for an interview? And I said, yes, I can. Now, I'm living in Archer City, Texas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't have a plane ticket. I said, yes, I can. I said, could you make it in the afternoon? Because I'll be flying in. And she was like, I'm sure in her head, she was like, all right, hot shot.
I love it.
I got off the phone and I went downstairs to my parents. And I was like, I had gotten money for graduating from college, you know, from relatives and stuff. And I said, I need to get a plane ticket to New York City for day after tomorrow.
Oh.
And my parents were like, what? And I said, Mom, you can come with me or I'll go alone. And she's like, I'm coming with you. What are we doing? So then I flew to New York and I met with this woman and she goes, she was like, it's very unconventional how you got through to me. And I said, I know, I'm sorry for that. But I just got a voicemail every day and I didn't feel like I was getting any movement. And it's something I feel passionate about. She said, okay, you'll start in a month for Conan. I said, great.
Oh my gosh.
And when I started the intern program, I noticed a lot of people there were friends of someone or related to someone.
Well, sure.
You know, so.
Sure.
But
you had to be unconventional.
You kind of had to. So I'm sure people,
she thought
I was crazy that I flew out for an internship interview. But I just wanted to be in the world of comedy. My whole life I had wanted to do like stand up or sketch comedy. And I was writing a one woman show for myself. And I felt like in particular getting on a late night talk show and seeing a stand up every night do an opening monologue. So that's what I did. And then I lied. I interned for a few months and then they try to pick people out of the general intern pool to be specific people's interns. And then you have more access, you know, you're not at the front, you know, getting people coffee. So they asked me, there were two internships that were allowed to watch rehearsals or to be down on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
One was the writer's intern because they would run jokes and stuff down to Conan.
Sure.
And the other one was the music intern, Max Weinberg's intern. Well, the writer's intern was already taken. So they said, you know, we're trying to figure out where to put you as an assistant. You know, what do you know about music? And I was like, everything. I love music.
And not to be undone
no,
and not to be stopped.
Not true. Not true. I'm not trying to be a proponent of
lying. Did you play any instrument at all?
No.
Fantastic.
No. And then,
did you enjoy music? We all do.
I do enjoy music.
Turns out we all like music.
Turns out, but like I didn't know much about music. So like he, you know, Max would send me to SIR, which was a rental company for instruments. And I literally would go in there with a list and I kind of flirted with the guy that worked behind the counter, like buddied up to him. And I'm like, hey, what is this? I have to get it for today.
I can't be made a fool of. I must
make
this work.
Help me. And I think it was very apparent to Max and the band that I was not the most savvy on music because like bands would come. They'd be like, oh, my gosh, guess who's here today? And I'm like, huh?
What?
And it was like some famous band. And
but that's amazing. I mean, just to not to to derail us here, but this is so much in keeping with what you said earlier about if you're lucky enough to kind of know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the dedication that you had, people, I think people think of creative artistic types because there are plenty of us out there who are not like you. That are these sort of floaty poetry reading, like, I don't know, my head's in the clouds. I just know I need to make my art.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to make that tangible. And I mean, just hearing about your experience growing up and being in Jakarta and then being thrust back into the United States and kind of what you had to do to protect yourself and getting through that tough year and then finding your own way in Archer City, it just you talked about how tough your mom is. I mean, clearly you're very tough in a great way, in a sensitive, empathetic way to other people. And you know, you've got I know this sounds like I'm rounding it off. I'm a terrible interviewer, but that toughness, you know, the tenaciousness is having that tenacity, especially if you know you want to do this. What a great combination of having that talent, but saying, okay, this is my plan. This is how I'm going to get here, and being really insistent about it is so impressive. I wasn't like that at all.
Well, I think you have hills and valleys of it.
Oh,
you know, I think we all do. It comes in spurts. But my mom taught me something really valuable that so I'm interning on Conan and my life stream was to be on Saturday Night Live. That's all I wanted to do was be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. And I'm interning on Conan and the casting that did sort of like our little extras for different skits and stuff Conan would do. He also worked on Saturday Night Live. And as an intern, you don't make any money. And so you're really struggling. I sold my car. I had a car and I sold it and I was living on that money. And so he said, Angela, do you want to make some extra money on the weekends? I said, yeah. And he goes, all right, well, I do the extras casting for Saturday Night Live. I was like, oh my God, that's great. So I was, there is footage of me like reacting to Chris Farley doing stuff.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Like, so I was an extra and I got to be there for rehearsal and see those guys and then see how the show worked. And so I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I'm going to be on Saturday Night Live as an extra. It's not really what I wanted. And she was like, well, get more specific, Angela. Get more specific.
Oh my gosh.
So like in my wants. So then I was like, okay, so then I said, I want to be, Friends had come out and I thought it was a really great show. So then I said, I want to be on NBC on Thursday nights for the comedy lineup. I want to be on a TV show on NBC on Thursday nights. Yes, I wrote it in my journal. And then my friend and I, we drove up to Mulholland when I first moved here. And so we would just sort of shout into the night our want.
It's so hokey, right? Oh, but I love
it. But so I shouted. I was like, I'm going to be so specific. So she was like, I want to find love. Be happy. And like, I want, you know, like 5 children. Like she was like this. Like, and she's about to have her third, by the way.
But all right,
so
all right.
I yell into the night sky of LA. I go, I want to be on NBC on Thursday nights on
Angela.
A comedy show. Isn't that crazy?
Oh,
isn't that so bizarre?
That's so fantastic.
But I don't tell that story very often because I think like, oh, people are going to think I'm crazy. But I do think there's something
you're
for women.
You're not crazy. No.
Men and women to know what they want. And then,
I agree.
And then just don't take no. Like, I mean, you know, you obviously don't want to become a pariah and like,
right.
you know, offend people. But just know if it's something you feel strongly about, be prepared and do everything you can.
Well, I love that idea. And I also, I mean, I want to ask you where, so for you, some people just are more confident than others. Mm-hmm. One thing I was going to say is I love that you had the humility and the foresight to know that you could learn from being a page or from being an intern and all mm-hmm. of that. Because I think that sometimes people have the drive and the ambition to be, you know, when you're a teen, when you're in your 20s, you know what you want. You might know that part, but you also kind of just expect that that's going to be how you get it, is knowing it. Like, right. oh, I'm just going to, yeah. I know I want that. So I want to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. So I'll just be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. Somehow that will just work out.
Right.
And I would never be an intern. I wouldn't be an extra. Then they would never take me seriously as
right.
a da da da.
Right.
And so for you to have that combination too of saying, you know, no, I don't know about this, but one way I can find out is to really start from the bottom
right.
and just be scrappy and fantastic and memorable and
right.
and learn and take that knowledge and then take it forward. And I think there's a sort of a laziness to some ambition
right.
where you just go, well, no, I'm talented enough. They'll figure it out.
Right.
And I think that's a mistake. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the people I have worked with in LA, especially on our show, like someone like Steve Carell, that I respect so much, what their combination of no ego and
yeah.
very hard workers.
Yeah.
And that's like, I feel like the people that have a lot of longevity in this business is like, you can't have an ego and you have to respect everyone you work with, no matter what their position. And you have to be a hard worker.
Yeah.
You just do. Like, you know, I had friends, and I'm sure people listening to this do too, that I worked at a restaurant with, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, I'm an actor. Are you in a class anywhere? Because, you know, you can't always get up on stage. I tried to just be on stage as much as I could for myself
yeah.
to get myself out there.
Yeah.
But, like, you have to be doing something. You can't just say, I'm a lawyer
right.
and not go to law school or
right.
own a single legal book. And
yeah.
it's the same in the creative profession, too. If you're a writer, then you write.
Yeah.
If you're an actor, then you're doing some casting workshop or
yeah.
a class. You're doing it.
How do you deal with, and this is something that I think comes up for a lot of actors and writers and creative people, not just here, but anywhere. I think because maybe you're so creative and there's a vulnerability there, fear is such a big part of anyone's life. And it's mm-hmm. something that we all have to kind of work through and be on a path to, I think, understand and learn to have a relationship with that's
mm-hmm.
not bad.
Right.
But how, like when you were a teenager, you know, I know we talked about you kind of putting your head down and getting through that year that was tough. But just in general, especially, again, with being creative, there was a question here, I promise. How do you get past, because sometimes that I think people get pulled back by their fear. Oh, I want to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live, but what if they don't want me?
Yeah.
And oh, I'll be paralyzed by that. And I'll work at a restaurant and tell someone I'm an actor, but part of me isn't taking that casting director workshop because I'm so afraid of failing. Mm-hmm. What was your approach to that? And what would you tell young women who are like, oh, I want to do this, but I'm so afraid. Maybe it's easier just to not do it.
Well, I think I sort of had this built in inside me, but my friend Rachel most recently put it into tangible words that might be more helpful than my rambling. So this Rachel sort of shared this with me, but I've done it my whole life. In my head, I would play out a situation and I would just see where I could see it going. And but how that translates into my life now is like, let's say I'm afraid I'll never find love again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say to myself, and then what?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I'll enjoy my daughter and my friends and my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? And then I'll have a great life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, and there's always, and then what? You know, like, what if, you know, after The Office, I don't get another TV show? Okay, and then what? Well, I don't know. I'll figure something out. Maybe I'll get a job, you know, teaching in a college. Okay, and then what? And I'll love my students. And then what? I just like say, and then what? And what happens is you take this fear and you just sort of break it down and you show that fear really has no power.
Yeah.
It just doesn't.
And I think what I'm also hearing from you, not just taking the power away from the unknown of the fear, but also being able to look at it positively. I mean, everything that you've come out of, you've also had a positive aspect. I mean, somebody listening to this who's very negative could say, well, yeah, if I ask the and then what question, I'll just answer and then I won't have any money and then I won't figure anything out and then I'll be miserable. But am I right in saying that you would suggest, well, then you might be the kind of person who's not going to be happy even if you get what you want?
Well, exactly.
In a sense,
exactly.
Right?
Because happiness is a choice.
Yeah.
It's a definite choice.
I guess that's what I'm saying I see you choosing to be happy through all of that.
Happiness is definitely a choice. Now, if I don't work on a TV show again, will I be sad about that? Yeah, but I better get ready and pull up, you know, my bootstraps, as the expression goes, because I have a daughter and I better figure something else out. You just have to, people have to figure things out. And that process doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah.
I think fear, you should be as comfortable with fear as you are with happiness or anger. And I think a lot of times for people, insecurity flips to fear.
Yeah.
Shame flips to fear.
Yeah.
And so if you think you're going to get made fun of, then you become fearful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I think embrace getting made fun of, maybe because I had to go to 4 high schools in 4 years.
Yeah.
And I got made fun of right out of the gate. I was like, okay, this is going to happen. I'm going to get made fun of. I'm short, you know, and there'll be short jokes. Bring them on.
Right.
I can handle them.
Right.
Are you tall? Are you have a big butt? Are you have funny ears?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right, dude, own it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just own it and wear it like a mantle. And then no one has anything on you.
It's so funny that you said that, because that was the other thing I was going to say was body image stuff. Cause I feel like along with the vulnerability of being creative and the fact that kind of doesn't necessarily ever go away, no matter who you are. Maybe you live in Iowa and you love writing and you wanted to write a book and you've ended up being a paralegal and you're afraid to write that book. And maybe you're an actress living in LA and you're, you know, in your 30s and you feel like your butt's too big, that, you know, that stuff doesn't necessarily go away. And I know you had talked about having that you were sort of small and boyish when you were in high school.
Oh yeah.
How did you work through your kind of body images, and does that still come up for you? And as I said,
oh, I think as a woman, it always does. We just get a little more comfortable with ourselves, so we don't care as much. But you know, I had an audition recently, and the casting director, a fan of The Office, but did say to me, "Well, you're not like glamorous, beautiful. So like, you know, you're sort of like that quirky." And I go, oh, yeah, I know what I am. I'm not Angelina Jolie. I'm not going to have a gun strapped to my thigh unless we're making fun of it.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, know who you are.
But don't you think that's hard for teenage girls when you see? I mean, you know, I was on my way to the airport and I was listening to Paul Gilmartin's podcast, The Mental Illness Happy Hour. And he was talking to somebody about how they feel about, you know, how important it is for what other people think of them, and that it stays important. Like it's important when you're a kid and in school, and it through your life, it can potentially stay too important. You know, what does this person think? What is their opinion? And I'm listening to this and we're passing this billboard for like Lucky Jeans or Guess or something. And I see this gorgeous 14-year-old girl with this crazy body, whatever that means, in her underwear. And just, you know how sometimes subliminal messages, you're more aware of them than not? And I just had that moment where, clear as day, like someone was saying in my ear, even though I was listening to that podcast, I'm supposed to look like that.
Yeah.
Like I just heard it.
Right.
And I thought, oh God, it's been a while since I had that concrete of a recognition about all the stuff that pours into my brain every day that I don't think about, but it gets in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. What do we tell teenage girls? Because I like looking at fashion magazines. I like clothes.
I do
I'm
too.
Not, you know, I'm too. Not, I'm not going to say, I mean, I'm not ready to say, to be the person to say, absolutely not, under no circumstances can I look at a model. But if we're going to still have that, what are we doing for our kids and for ourselves that makes up for the kind of the negative side of that?
Right. I've thought about this a lot with my daughter. She's going to be growing up in Los Angeles, and that's kind of, to me, a scary place to grow up.
Yeah.
But I think about this all the time. Like, if she sees a girl like that, like, what I would try to explain to her. And, like, one of the things I want to do is, like, say, first of all, you know how everybody has a job? You know, if you are really strong, maybe you're great at like digging potholes because you're super strong. And maybe you work in construction because you can lift things. Maybe you're really smart and so you're a doctor, or you have great hand-eye coordination.
Maybe you love dump trucks.
Maybe you love dump trucks, Janet. but I want to, first of all, explain to her that that girl there, that is her job. And so part of her job is looking that way. And that doesn't mean, like, I couldn't do that job. I don't look that way. And that's very specific to someone. And I kind of want to break it down and take the mystique away from it.
Like, I love that.
Her job is to look like that. And that's not a very realistic job, you know, but it is her job.
Yeah.
So I just want to try to say to Isabel, like, I really want everyone to know, like, want my daughter to know that we all bring something so specific to the table. And so, you know, maybe it's the fact that, you know, she's really caring.
Yeah.
And so what do you do with that? You use that and maybe you become, you know, a teacher or a nurse or, but when I see that girl on the billboard, she's chosen that to be her job, and her job is based on her looks. Mm-hmm. And that is, a job that can't even last a very long time.
Right.
So it's like, and I'm happy for her and you can be happy for her. But if you don't look like her, that's okay, you know? And I just sort of want to break it down and be like, you know.
I like that because there's so much less anger there than there can be. I think it's easy to go to a place of
And it doesn't mean that we don't want to. And we also value beauty very differently. Like, and I hope that, like, girls now see beauty through the ages, you know, like, and see, like, paintings from, go to museums and see paintings from the Renaissance when it was actually, if you were skinny, that meant you were poor and that was unattractive.
Sure.
But if you had a plump tush, then you had money and that was considered hot.
Sure.
You know? So it's all about sort of our perception now. And I think one of the things that's great with the internet that you're seeing more people show their talents online, whether it's someone just sets a camera up at their piano and plays and sings. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that, like, looks are just one part of it. And everyone's look is different too.
Yeah.
I think we're having less of, like, I think Christie Brinkley's beautiful, but it's that very sort of blonde, blue-eyed thing. And I think you're seeing less people glorified in beauty there, like, that are that type. It's more of a diversity.
It's more diversity, yeah.
But you can't, you know. And I want to break down the profession because I think you pull the veil back because I'm like, well, Isabel, she had three people do her hair that day.
Right.
Just like how mommy has, like, this amazing woman do my hair for my Clairol ads. And then she had someone do makeup and then they touched her up all day long.
Yeah.
She kept getting lip gloss.
Yeah.
And then they put a fan on her and made her hair blow like that. Okay. And then she had someone come and, you know, design amazing clothes and then alter it specifically to fit her.
Yeah.
How many of us can buy a jacket off a rack and it fits us exactly like an alterations person would alter it, especially
for
your body. And then they had someone look at her body and be like, you know what? would accent her hips more is if she wore a one piece and not a two piece.
Yeah.
And let's put a push up bra on her. You know, and all.
So it's not just her job. We're thinking about the 25 other people whose job it is just to make her look like that.
And then someone's like, you know what? Let's make her legs look more toned. We're going to put makeup on her legs.
And worst case scenario, we can fix all of this after we
put it through the computer. We'll put it through a computer and etch out like any little nick and scratch. And so I just want her to know much went into that moment.
Yeah.
That we don't have to give it that much power.
I think that's wonderful. Do you remember when I don't know if you do, but Jamie Lee Curtis did something. Remember she did like a magazine cover where she was like, don't touch it up.
Yeah.
You know, and she just wanted, there was such a great article and it really stuck with me in terms of the things that people do that stay with you that, I mean, I'm sure it was a big deal for her too, because she really wanted to make that statement. But that moment of her saying, but it's so interesting how unusual it was. It was so unusual to have one woman say, I'm famous. I don't look like this all the time. This is what I looked like before they did stuff to the picture. And this is what I look like afterwards. And I need girls to know that's not real.
Yeah.
And I just love everything that you said, Angela. I think that makes so much sense, because it's easy to sort of go to the place of just, you know, my women's studies class in college just going, this is wrong, and like tearing up
it's
the picture.
It's not going to go away.
And then living in LA and being in the, and that's why one of the reasons I wanted this podcast to be honest about who we're talking to, who I am, what I'm faced with, like what we're, I'm not the person on the mountain saying, tear up that magazine, burn this, do that. This is right. I'm living my life. I want to say to girls, to women older than me, to women younger than us, we don't know. We don't have, you know, nobody has all of the answers, but to give a sense of community so that you can, so that someone like you, I'm going to think about that. What you just said, you're going to tell to your daughter, helped me, because I'm going to see the billboard and kind of giggle to myself thinking that about the conversation
people
we
made
had.
That happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think breaking it down, like I know sometimes I listen to people and I'm like, well, your life was very easy. Your life was very privileged and there wasn't any hardship. So yeah, maybe you can have a positive spin or say that happiness is a choice. But I have to tell you, growing up overseas, and then I had one of my very best friends, a horrible tragedy happened to her in the prime of her life, and she ended up being paraplegic, and just seeing her life as an able-bodied person with, you know, a young woman, and seeing all of that change in an instant, you know, and she did not lose her outlook. She got frustrated. She got mad. She had, you know, I remember visiting her one day, in rehab, and I was like, you know what we're going to have today? We're going to have a big honking pity party. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And we cried and cried and we cussed and we, you know, and then I was like, and now we got to do something else. So it's like, and I have witnessed people go through extreme hardship in that way. And I've had some things happen in my life that were pretty sad, and you just can't let that define you. You just can't. And so you have to find something in yourself. And I think those are the people that ultimately succeed and prevail, is they're like, you can't take it all away from me. Yeah. I have one piece of me that's still mine. And just find yourself in that moment and not let it just say who you are anymore.
Oh, I love it.
So
that's
so
wonderful.
Well, I don't know, like, if any of it makes sense, but I do feel like
it all makes sense. It's fantastic. So. I'm sitting here crying. I don't know how to wrap it up any better than that. Except that I really want you to say something in Indonesian.
Well, I think the thing I'll just leave everyone with is that like life is going to be hectic and crazy, but if you can just find your peaceful place. And so in Indonesian, they say this thing when they say goodbye. And I think it's a lovely goodbye, because it's not just like, bye, see you later. It actually means to go about your journey peacefully, like wishing someone peace. And so that is selamat jalan. Selamat jalan.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Remember when we could save kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.